How's everybody doing? My name is Aaron Showtime Taylor. Welcome to another edition of Hard in the Paint. Like I said before, I'll say it again. A lot of guys I met inside of prison, some of the most solid cats that I've ever come across. And when they come out, I like to bring them right here on my show, Hard in the Paint, so you can be introduced to the type of people that I was around and you can hear the type of people that I grew with. And the day I got my boy, the one man who brought me out of retirement is in coaching while I was inside, Jamal Green, a.k.a. Dr. J. What's happening with you, man?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How you feeling, man?
Oh, man, real good. Good to be here.
All right, you fresh out. How many meals have you had since you've been home?
A lot.
Said a lot. How long you been out?
This Sunday, man, 90 days.
90 days, 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
What'd it feel like?
It feels good to not be in standing up for 4 o'clock count.
It feels
good to be eating with a regular spoon and fork, so... It feels like I won a lotto.
Man, I definitely know that feeling. Let's back up some, right? So when we met inside, right, it was on the basketball court like a lot of people I meet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I did give you an interview, whether it was in the show or San Quentin News, I forget which one. But the main point was I found out that you played basketball right there in Englewood and you grew up there. So let's talk about that for a minute. You played basketball where?
I played basketball for Englewood High, the Y. Started playing basketball in Gardena at Recreation Park,
but
I furthered my skills in high school a little bit. My first 2 years after that, I kind of like put it down and really went the wrong way, but I played for Englewood and the Y.
Now, definitely when we was inside, you was definitely known for getting off the ground quick on a rebound or a shot, right, when it come to that layup up in there, right? Now, where did you develop that? Was that a natural talent or was it something that somebody seen and helped you develop and, you know, helped you with that liftoff?
I would say it's a natural talent. My father, my brothers are very good at jumping. I think my little brother is probably the one that has the most springs out of all of us. I haven't quite seen my son jump up and get a rebound because I was locked up in prison, so... I would say it came from my father.
All right, genetics. So just genetics, right? And mm-hmm. just recently, I was with Ma and Raphael and another guy that played with us basketball inside, Dre. And we went to Ma's, your granddaughter's birthday party, right? Look at his face. See, I like that. This is the reason I bring it up because we got to get him to smile right here. So before we go back into the sports again, right, let's back up to that. Mm-hmm. Your first time going to... something with your granddaughter. How did that feel?
It felt, again, like winning a lotto. It just felt like what I really worked hard for, doing all those self-help groups, all that hard work that I put in to just like really separating myself from the BS. Because at the end of the tunnel, I knew there was a reward, and it was things like that, going places with my granddaughter, my kids. So it just felt good to be in their lives again because I didn't give up when I was in prison, so.
Okay, well, we're going to go into that then. Let's take the interview in that direction then. Okay, so now, which one of the self-help groups that you took inside of prison had the most impact on you? Which one is the one that right now you call on and it's like second nature to you?
I would think it's like a group everybody, you even familiar with, it was called GRIP. It's called Guide Your Rage Into Power.
Yeah, Guiding Rage Into Power, GRIP.
It just really helped me take the blinders off of my eyes and recognize just all the stuff that I was doing wrong, you know, in prison and on the streets. So I would say GRIP. You know, a lady came to one of my victim offender dialogues, and her name was Ayula, and her story just really it impacted me because I hadn't really thought about my victims until she really explained her pain and how she felt when her son was murdered on Mother's Day. So it just really opened my eyes, and it just changed me a lot.
The group GRIP, Guiding Rage Into Power, was put together by a man by the name of Jacques Verdun, and that group is inside the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. And what happens is, in GRIP, they take you on a deep dive and walk you backward down the path to traumatic events that take place in your life. So we learned in that group because we've both taken group. I don't think we was in the group together.
My was Tribe 975.
Yeah, you know, I'm, you know, 933, baby. You know what I'm saying? 933, right? And what it does is it allows you to go backward down the path so you get to see the places where something traumatic happened in your life And it takes you further back so you can see where the decision-making process that you made in that moment actually began someplace in your childhood. And so that's what he's talking about. And so without going too deep into it, was there one significant event that you remember that came up in group that you could kind of look at and say, you know what, I based a lot of my decisions as an adult based on this event that happened right here? Or even better, what was the understanding of understanding that emotion once you understood what it was about?
Growing up, I came up in a real good two-parent home, but there were some issues with me and my father at a young age. And his discipline and skills were something that they made me rebel. And by rebelling, I found myself in the streets, not looking for a father, but just really wanting to find a place to fit in. So I grew accustomed to that. And before you knew it, I was in the streets gangbanging. So I would say just early on, just not really listening to my parents and really thinking that I knew everything. So going to grip, I recognized that toxic, you know, those shades you put on. Just looking at people in my neighborhood. Michael Jordan wasn't on my corner. There was the drug dealers, there were the pimps, the hustlers, the pushers, and those were like my all-stars to me. And I really formed my life around just how they was living, and I wanted to be like them. So they had a deep impact on me at a young age.
And so eventually you end up, you know, committing a crime that sent you to prison. How comfortable are you talking about that?
I'm very comfortable.
Okay, go right ahead.
I went to prison for second degree homicide, aiding and abetting a homicide, which in the law eyes is that I had a role in a homicide. I regret it dearly because when my crime happened, it was all about me. But once I went to prison, as I was saying, in groups like GRIP, I recognized that this person had a father, this person had a daughter, this person had a family, and he was human. But when I was in my street context, I really didn't even look at him in that aspect. It was all about me. It was all about revenge. So when I look back on that, that is where my transformation started.
So it begins at the point where you start to understand your responsibility and your accountability in it.
True.
Okay. Once you have that moment, right, if you don't mind sharing, right, what is it like once you take that step across the line where it's like 1 minute you blaming everybody and everything for what put you in the situation, put you in a cell, and then it's like the next minute it's like, nah, it's all on me?
I felt like a new person because I just started to see life in a different aspect. You know, I blamed everyone for so long about why I wasn't successful, my ex-wife, my father, my brothers, my family, my friends. And when I got that aha moment, I really recognized that it was me, because I think a lady, she was really big in prison doing, getting people dates. And her name was Connie Khan or something. She worked with Keith Wiley.
Right.
So she said that I was doing my parole plans, and she said, you know, no one could ever make you do anything in life. And it was just like, it was something went off in my head like a switch. Like she said, did your mother or your father make you join a gang? And I was like, no. And it was just like a slap in the face. And I really started to recognize like these choices that I was making, they were my decision. And the only way for me to change them is to turn them around.
Right. And so now we're going to go back towards sports, because in moments like that, a lot of times, a lot of us inside immediately go to the sports commitment, because whatever frustration that we're dealing with while we're dealing with that transformation in the group, we usually find ourselves in your football field, baseball field at San Quentin, right? And so how did you take that, some of those negative feelings that came about as you're healing, and transform them positively on the court? Or did you ever play football? Because I don't remember seeing you out there playing football. I only remember you on the court.
I only like women attacking me.
Oh, this cat, right? No. Yeah, well, we definitely wasn't having that up in prison, so it's good to be out here to have that.
No, I only played basketball. Before I left the prison, I became the intramural commissioner.
Okay, we're going to get to that, man. Hold on for the audience, man, because he's jumping out in front of stuff. We got to walk through this. He just jumped straight the way he was. Hey, I got to walk him through this interview. Hold up. Okay, let's back up. We all get to San Quentin, right? In that first intramural season, you played on what team?
my first intramural season, I played, I can't think of his name from A. Trey. You might have been coaching that team with Youngster.
No, I wasn't coaching that team.
Smoke.
Yeah, no, I wasn't coaching that team.
Played you. I remember that.
Yeah.
I know it was because I can't think, you know, because it was Battleship in that league. And I just don't quite remember the name of the team. But when I first came to the prison, I was trying to be on sorry teams so I could really be the star and shine the most. So,
hey, look, you heard what he said. He went to the sorriest team so he could shine the most.
I could shine the most and really be the all-star of the team. But it really didn't work out too good for me for years until I did win my first two championships in prison, which was like, man, I wanted to do that before I was released from prison.
All right, well, so let's back up, though, right? So now getting inside of the basketball community in San Quentin, you end up getting on the Warriors, right? Mm-hmm. So what was the process for you on that? Because you had played organized ball in high school. Mm-hmm. Was this the first opportunity you actually had to get back into some organized ball again?
Very much so.
Okay, and so how did you take that transformation? Because in high school, you were 16, 17 years old. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're doing this, you're 35, 36. Mm-hmm. You know, how did your body change and how did you adapt to that?
I think when I first went to prison, I was in real good shape because, you know, you go through that transition of being in prison so long and being locked down and being on yards where there is no movement. So you go to a place like San Quentin and it's just a program where it's dedicated to rehabilitating yourself. So I was in a real good place mentally, physically, and far as health-wise. So I felt like I was at my best. But for me, I think getting into the Warriors it wasn't an easy task because those coaches were like coaches on the streets. You know, you really had to really bring your A game to play. But at the end, when I did the interview with you, I got to see that it was more than basketball. And especially when I seen Bob Myers with the Warriors t-shirt on, the San Quentin Warriors t-shirt on. That's when we did that interview.
Right.
It just really just opened my eyes up and was like, this is more than basketball. Like, these people represent us outside these walls. And for me to be a part of something like that, I really didn't care, you know. I wasn't getting a lot of playing time. I played for both teams. But I shined in some games. So I think at the end of the day, that's all that meant to me was to really be able to utilize my skills and showcase them. So, but being on a team was just like, words couldn't explain it, you know, it was
right.
Bigger than life.
And what he's talking about is San Quentin has the San Quentin Warriors, but they also have the San Quentin Kings, which is a team made up of predominantly 40 years and over on this team. It's more like the senior club. And he's talking about a time when Bob Myers and the Golden State Warriors were literally fighting for an NBA championship, and Bob Myers couldn't come to the prison. So what he did was he did an interview post-game with Amy Bachman in the Bay Area with a San Quentin Warriors t-shirt on. Just recently, he did an interview after the Golden State Warriors won a championship where he was wearing a San Quentin Kings shirt on the podium. The Golden State Warriors, Bob Myers, Curtin Kemp, Lakeup, that whole program, that whole organization supports the San Quentin Warriors that Ma was a part of. And a lot of the people that I bring here are connected to the Warriors through that program. And that's one of the reasons Ma is sitting here now talking about the benefits of it. You have to go back and check the interview from 2016 in San Quentin News that I did on interview on him where he spoke about what we're just speaking about now. So once the impact of understanding that the Warriors as an organization was a part of the San Quentin Warriors as a rehabilitative program through sports in there, then how did you adjust to that?
I think I adjusted real well because, you know, you really recognize the choices that you make in prison not only shape you forever, but being a part in their program was like an eye-opening experience. Them giving us tennis shoes free every year, just coming down that hill and taking a lot of people from the Bay Area got on me because I'm a Lakers fan. So, you know, for me to take a picture with the trophy, you know, they kind of got on me on the tears, but it was more to it than just basketball, as I said, because I came from a good home and I recognize what team is about, as you was just talking about earlier. Like, you may have a bad day on a tier, but when you come to a game, it's just like you get to set all that stuff aside and get to really, you know, we become one. We become, I don't care where you from out there. If you from this side of the track or you that from that side of the track, you from the Bay Area, you from Southern California. We all connected in a way that was life-changing, and it built friendship, it built camaraderie, it built friendships offside the court, you know. So I'm real close with, like, MD. He's a good dude, and he's from the Bay Area. So for him to be on my team and we did win a championship, it was just like, this is a brother, you know, a real good friend of mine. So
MD, who he's talking about, was one of the guests, previous guests, Montrell Vines. Jack that thing up. His interview will be coming out soon. And you won a championship with what team?
Cookies and the Franchise.
The Franchise. Franchise is the team that I said during one of the previous interviews, the only team I've ever known to win three straight championships, right? And I said it before and I'll say it again. I don't care on what level you play in basketball. To win a championship is hard. To win two, you doing something. To win three in a row, that's hard to do. And with the turnover rate in prison, to have that type of team that can win three championships in a row when people are getting transferred out for whatever the reason all the time is huge and monumentous. And you played a part in which championship?
The one right before COVID.
So that was the last one. One of the hardest ones to win, because I think you guys was playing a team from that was primarily Bay Area guys, right?
True.
Right, and it kind of got off the court. It was like controversy on regional-wise.
True.
But on the court, it was basketball.
It was basketball.
All right. What did it feel like to win that championship?
It felt good because I tried for so many years, as I said, on teams that just showcased my talent. And I had to really sit myself down in my cell and recognize that it's just not about me. You know, Michael Jordan never won anything by himself. Kobe won with a team. He did lead his team. So I really had to find a way to take my talents to a higher level just by, like, just being a rebounder. Because, you know, people knew that I could score, but by me just playing my role, it just really, it put us in position to win. And it was like, it's like a feeling like no other, because I got really to a point to where so many people told me that, you know, you'll never be nothing, you know, unless you win one up in here. And so for me to win two, it was like, man, it was real big for me.
Yeah, under that category, I'll never be nothing. one of those championship runs that he's talking about, where he took his talents and said, let me play a role, was in the last team that I coached inside, that Maul put together. And then he came to me and asked me, man, I want you to be the coach of this team. We ended up changing the name because the name of the team was the 76ers. That was his team. Dr. J, ain't no problem with it, right? But the other players we brought in, we came back, and what was the name of the All-Stars or something like that?
I think it was the Dream Team.
The Dream Team. And some of the same people that have been on this show, some of the same people that are coming on this show, some of the same people I was in the movie Cue Ball with were on that team, and we had a really, really good run. And thankfully for those individual people, they went back out to court, that being Anthony Amos Jr. and Allen McIntosh Black. But we had one person that we brought in who was hurt, who had won two championships previous on the team that he eventually went back and won a championship with the Franchise, and that's Damon Lewis, a.k.a. Ula, right? And definitely let me congratulate you on winning them championships. And I heard what you said just now about, you know, you ain't won nothing if you don't win a championship.
I think I'll never forget the game where one of your players scored 47 points or 48 points.
That was E. That was he scored 49 points.
49.
So. Yeah. Yeah, he did that on ATL. I'm waiting to get you on Hard in the Paint so we can talk about that game, dude. I'm waiting to get you on Hard in the Paint so we can talk about that. But on the way to winning your championship, I was a part of that run with you, and we went as far as we could, right? We made it to the best of three final and lost that third one. You know, Mailman was on the team who eventually went up to Pelican Bay. I don't know if he's getting out or not. Boo was on our team.
Boom.
We did the best we could, and we got as far as we could. I definitely appreciate that run. Okay, so now you come home, right, and you got an LLC.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
All my life, I've been a janitor, and I tell people this. I've told the board members, I've told people on tours that I feel like I'm cleaning is a passion of mine. So I feel like I'm the LeBron James of cleaning. So I feel like all my life, I really put it on the back burner and tried it on a street approach by hustling. But going to prison and working for HFM just really showed me that there are million-dollar contracts. So I came home and
What is HFM? What does that mean?
HFM stands for Health Facility Maintenance. It's a PIA program inside the prison. It's a vocation for cleaning. And they really helped me gain more skills, like being certified in cleaning up bloodborne pathogens, cleaning up infectious waste. So those skills and those talents that I did, I took them and I put them on my resume. I came home and I started my own company called Green Quality Maintenance.
Green Quality Maintenance.
And I'm just trying to really take it to the highest level right now. So I'm really excited and the future looks real good. So
So let's look at this. Now you 90 days out of prison. Mm-hmm. You come home already set up with the LLC. Or you put it together once you got out?
I put it together once I got out.
And so
I had this vision in prison.
Right. And that's what I want to get to, because that sounds like somebody who actually prepared to be released.
Oh, without a doubt, man.
Okay. So what goes into that? When did you actually start putting those plans together? And then when did you say, oh, it's finna happen?
In 2017, my friend Sandman went home. And I had just come out of to backtrack before that. My wife had left me in prison and I started to really get into some real bad habits.
Okay.
So I went into a dark spell for a while and I did dust my shoulders off and I bounced back and I really changed my life around. And after my friend went home in 2017, I recognized I really want to be in that pack of people that are going home. So what I mean by that is that I really separated myself. I got rid of my phone. I just really was I stopped smoking weed in prison because a dirty test changed my life around in prison. It's a funny story, but it would be the defining point in prison to where I said, after this, I know I'm going home.
Mm-hmm.
So after Sandman went home, I just really got heavily into self-help groups. In fact, instead of sitting in the back of self-help groups, I started running self-help groups. Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. Putting myself in position to, when the board see me, that they would see me as a candidate that would be much different than the regular people that are coming before them that are asking for to be released. So getting prepared for board is an experience like no other. Like, you really have to dig in your past and create a parole plans, a roadmap of how you're gonna navigate success once you get out of prison. And if you can't really articulate it in a board meeting, then you'll be deemed. In 2020, I was denied parole because in my first board hearing, I was blaming my father for abuse. And I had, as I brung up earlier about that lawyer that told me about no one can make you do anything, it dawned on me that I was minimizing in my first board hearing. So it was like preparing for board is like getting in the ring and fighting with Mike Tyson. That's not gonna be an easy task. So if I can just stand up and go the distance with him, then I got a better chance at winning than me getting knocked out. So with that being said, I was knocked out the first round and it didn't feel good. And I wanted a rematch. So for the next 18 months, I even went much harder. I think in my last board hearing, the commissioner said, I've never seen anyone write 25 book reports and know how to articulate them. So I really just set myself aside away from everyone else and really focused on opening that gate. And so that preparation was like, it was just life changing. It was like,
Is that attention to detail, the attention to detail that you're talking about, is that what you used when you was putting together your LLC?
Very much so, because I've worked for some contracts before and I noticed that They have taught me to pay attention to detail. And so, like, my life has been catered to that, like the way I dress, the way I speak. So detail is something that's very important in life to me. So I notice in my business, my goal would be to make sure that my client is happy. And starting my LLC, I learned a lot of skills in COVID on just how important cleaning was and making sure that people are safe and people could live a better life by my skills that I've learned in prison.
All right, I got you. All right, we can wind this one up, but I definitely would be remiss in my duties if we didn't do a fast lightning sports trivia right now. Since you happen to be a 76ers fan, I'm assuming not just a 76ers fan, but a Dr. J fan.
Without a doubt.
Okay, well, you say without a doubt, but mm-hmm. You on Hard in the Paint, so you ready for this one?
Yeah.
All right, tell me the first movie Dr. J played in.
You Have Me There.
What? Wait, hold it. Wait. Wait, let's rewind the camera and play that back on what he just said.
But I can tell you the first dunk contest he won.
Well, we ain't gonna go there yet. I'm running this trivia. You got to get that. What's the first movie Dr. J played in? The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh.
Wow. I'm gonna have to really look that one up.
Listen, if you're online, go ahead and look that up real quick. You'll find out some stuff. All right. What was the name of the team that Dr. J played for in the ABA?
I'm gonna get this right. I think it's the Nets.
Did somebody say New York, New Jersey Generals? Did somebody say that? And then he went to the Nets. This man said he was a Dr. J fan. We're gonna have to check the camera. Look at the look on his face. Get him on camera again. Okay. Who did Dr. J do the Rockabye Baby dunk on?
You have me there again. You have me there.
This man said he was a doctor and he don't know that the Rockabye Baby, the Rockabye Baby dunk
is when he
was
it.
Yeah, when he cuffed it. Who got posterized though that by your team, the Lakers?
I want to say it was I know it wasn't Bob McAdoo because I watched that game.
It was Michael Cooper. Posterized.
Okay, all right, because I remember that series and I really went crazy.
Okay. Who was defending Dr. J when he went baseline and did the up and under layup?
Damn, I don't know. It's been a while because I remember that layup.
It's been a long
time. It has been a long time.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic Johnson were all there. Kareem came over to defend it. That's why the doc pulled it back and came
was
up on the other side.
Behind the backboard?
Yeah, when he floated behind the backboard. All right, let me give you an easy one then, right? This should be an easy one. What year did Dr. J go into the Hall of Fame?
You still have me.
This man became in the Heart in the Paint talking about he's a Dr. J fan. Okay, I got an easy one for you. This is the last one in the sports trivia. Who recently gave you an authentic 76ers Julius Irvin jersey?
That would be Aaron Showtime Taylor.
My boy, that's what I'm talking about, man. I've coached him. I've worked with him. We grew together. I seen him when he took a knee, the information he just gave about his wife leaving, and then I seen him come out of it. Solid brother. That's why he's here on Hard in the Paint. Look in that camera right there, right? There's somebody that's going to see this. And there's something that you're about to tell them that's going to help them through a dark moment to let them know it's something on the other side. Look in that camera and say it.
I would say never give up because going to prison was so life-changing. And I've never been a person. I learned the word optimistic in prison, but I've never, ever based my life on that because I've always been a go-getter. I've always been told no. And when they told me no, it made me want it even more. So I would say never give up on your dreams and stay focused because whatever you put your mind to, you can achieve it.
And with that being said, you, myself, and everybody that's watching live and going to see this later on have been hard in the paint. Bah! Ah. No, baby. That's what I'm talking about.